Hello and welcome to this Endo Life. I'm Jessica Duffin. I'm an endo warrior, an endo health coach, and this podcast is all about living and thriving with endometriosis. As always, this podcast is here for educational purposes only. Please consult your medical practitioner before making any nutritional changes or bringing in any supplements. Before we dive into today's episode, I want to give a shout out to my lovely sponsors at BU. And I wanted to tell you about their new bath bombs, which are naturally made and contain beautiful essential oils. And their peppermint and eucalyptus essential oils bath bomb is doing so well right now with endometriosis community. They're getting loads of feedback about it. And, you know, if you love the patches themselves, you're going to love the bath bombs, because essentially it's the patch in a bath bomb. So, you know, if you're on your period or if you're in pain, you could have a bath with some of the bath bombs or one of them. I don't know, you could have multiple if you want. And then get out the bath, maybe rub in some CBD balm and put your patch on top, which is what a lot of people are feeding back that they're doing. So I would love to do that, but I don't have a bath, so I can't. But if you have a bath, then, you know, I think these new bath bombs could be a lovely way to help alleviate some of your pain. So if you'd like to check them out, you can go to BU, which is buonline.co.uk, and you can also order them from anywhere in the world on cultbeauty.co.uk, and they deliver worldwide. Hi everyone. So today I have a slightly different episode for you. I'm still full of COVID or flu. We can't find any tests. On top of preparing for my course, Live and Thrive with Endo 2.0, which begins on Monday, and packing to take our rescue kitten back to the UK today. So there's a lot going on, and my lungs and throat, they're not quite ready to record a whole episode. So instead of doing a replay, I thought I would give you a peek into what I'm working on in my course. So today I'm sharing one of my lessons, which is all about the science of how pain works and how it can be influenced by the vagus nerve and our nervous system, which are pretty much one and the same, as you'll come to learn. This is a great episode to provide you with overall pain education. And here's an interesting fact. Pain education actually helps to treat and reduce pain, really. So that's a huge benefit of this episode. And the bonus is, if you're wondering about the course and whether it's for you, this gives you a little taster as to what's in store. So if after listening to this episode, you're curious about the course and you want to learn more, doors are closing tomorrow, Sunday, April 15th, 11:59 p.m. British Summer Time. And late bird pricing has just kicked in, dropping the course back down to the super early bird pricing of £100 upfront payment, or a payment plan of £35 per month for 3 months. So if you missed the super early bird pricing, you can grab the late bird pricing. You can learn more about the course at www.theendobellycoach.com/live-thrive-with-endo, or just go to the link in my show notes, which you can find on your phone wherever you're listening to this podcast. All right, let's get to the, I was about to say episode, but let's call it lesson. Welcome back to Live and Thrive with Endo 2.0. Today we're getting started with Module 4, Structural Support and Pain Signals. Today's lesson is Lesson 1, Understanding Pain. So in this lesson, you will learn how pain is produced, the leading factors that contribute to chronic pain, and how to calm down pain signals. To understand how pain works, we first need to understand how the nervous system works. The sympathetic nervous system is a system in the body known for the flight or fight response, which is our stress response. When we're ill, stressed, injured, threatened in any way, whether it's from an underlying infection or condition or just too many emails, this is a response that gets triggered. This is our survival response, which pumps out adrenaline and cortisol and directs blood, oxygen, and glucose to the brain, heart, and lungs so we can prepare to run or fight. In contrast, the parasympathetic nervous system is the system in the body known for the rest and digest response. It is the system that activates when we're asleep or resting, when we feel safe and calm, and is responsible for digestion and repair in the body. Because the flight or fight response is essential to our survival, when this is on, the rest and digest response is turned off. Now we understand the stress response, let's dive into how pain works.
Firstly, I know we all have a lot of fear around pain, and I totally appreciate that. As someone who has experienced extensive car accident injuries, endometriosis, and chronic bladder pain, I know it can not just be hard, but infuriating to be told to relax more about our pain. So this isn't about that. This is about understanding our pain, because research has actually shown that when chronic pain patients are more able to understand how pain works, they experience reduced pain and increased well-being. So we're going to start there. So pain is not inherently a bad thing. In fact, pain is integral to our survival. Pain is essential for keeping us alive and preventing further damage to tissues, organs, etc., by letting us know that we need to remove ourselves from danger or threat or treat an injury so we can survive. Essentially, it is part of our survival response. And I've just put a kettle there because obviously, if you touched that, you would experience pain, so you wouldn't continue to hold onto the metal part of the kettle. And without the pain response, we wouldn't do that. We would just keep our hand on the metal. So in that sense, think of pain like we think of inflammation. It's a natural part of keeping us alive, but certain triggers can turn it into a chronic state, and then we begin to have problems. So your pain is real, 100% and absolutely, but pain is made in the brain. That doesn't mean you're imagining your pain. That's just how pain works for every single one of us. Nerves in the body send danger signals to the brain when there is an injury or a perceived injury to the body. And the brain then responds with pain, so we pay attention and resolve the problem. So for example, imagine you're slicing an orange. If you cut your finger, the pain you're feeling isn't made in your finger. Instead, the nerves in your finger send danger signals to your brain. The brain then decides how to respond based on multiple factors, which we'll discuss in a moment. If attention is needed to help you survive, or in this case, just to stop a little of the bleeding, then pain is produced. So I really love this diagram as a way to show you what's happening when you cut your finger. The pain essentially is the signal that your body needs to move your finger, drop the hot handle on the frying pan, etc. So you can see here that number one is the injury, two is the danger signal, danger messages, three, your brain receives the danger messages, and four, the brain decides whether to make pain, and then five, the body will take action depending on what the pain is basically telling you to do. So it's also worth noting here that your nerves aren't firing off these danger signals all the time. Usually, they actually have a threshold, and danger signals are only sent when the danger exceeds a certain level and triggers a response from the nerves. Otherwise, we'd be kind of in sensory overload all the time. However, as you'll come to learn, this doesn't always mean that there is harm happening to the body, but actually that the threshold may have lowered in some of us because the nerves are highly sensitive and the brain is feeling unsafe. So you'll come to learn why this is important shortly, but just remember, just because the threshold has been reached, that doesn't actually mean harm is always happening to your body. So once the nerves fire off a danger signal, the brain then uses information from memories, the current situation, your emotional state, learnt behaviours, and more to make a decision about whether you're at risk and whether it needs to make pain so you can protect yourself. So, for example, your brain has learned that cutting your finger can be dangerous and that you generally need to stop blood flow and put on a plaster. This is a pretty obvious scenario where there's nothing stopping the brain from deciding to make pain. But in contrast, there are times when the brain will decide now is not the time for pain signals. So just to give you guys a trigger warning, skip this if you'd rather not hear me talk about my car accident, but it's a very clear example. When I was in my car accident, I broke my spine, hips, pelvis, pubic bone, and a few other things. But the key here is the pelvic area. When I woke up, my friend next to me was halfway through a window with a lamppost across her body, and she wasn't moving. And the paramedics and the emergency services, they wanted to get to her, and I needed to move. So even though I actually couldn't really get my legs to work, I didn't feel any pain. And with the help of friends, I managed to get out the car. And I was then held up for quite some time, but I was still standing on all of these broken bones, as the main priority was cutting my friend out of the car. So then when the paramedics got to me and put me on the stretcher and they realized how serious my injuries were, then my pain kicked in. When they started to move me, then my pain really kicked in. And what was happening is my brain then allowed me to feel the pain, because at that point my friend was alive and safe, and now I needed to deal with my injuries. So in that initial moment, my brain took the information around it and observed that I needed to move out the way for my friend to survive. And so I didn't feel pain and was able to get out the car. The same would happen if, for example, you tripped in the road. Your stress response would not tell you to check your knee you just banged. It would instead motivate you to get out of the road. Then once you're on the pavement safe, you would feel the pain from your bleeding knee. Now, this is really important for our community, because if the brain doesn't feel safe, then it's going to create stronger pain signals to get our attention, as it believes we're really in danger. So what's happening around us, how we're feeling emotionally, is going to affect how our brain makes pain. So for example, your endopain may be affected by whether you're already feeling anxious, scared, or stressed. I know many, many of you have told me that your endo worsened after a period of stress in your life, which we'll explore more shortly. But all of these feelings are essentially telling your brain one thing, that you're not safe. It triggers a stress response and puts your nervous system on high alert, causing that threshold to lower and the brain to create stronger pain signals. Your endo pain may also be affected by whether you already have negative memories around it. So for example, if you frequently end up in A&E, your brain will now use that memory to judge whether this scenario is dangerous. And given that your endo has resulted in A&E trips frequently, it's likely to respond with increased pain. Now, in the normal healthy scenario, once the initial threat has been removed, the stress response will calm down and the nerves will go back to normal, to, like, let's say, a resting state. The pain subsides as healing occurs, so that you will stay aware of the injury in case an infection occurs or something goes awry with the healing process. And once healing is complete, the pain should then go. In research, healing has been shown to complete within 3 to 6 months, depending on your injury, as long as, of course, the injury is actually capable of healing. Essentially, with endo, we sort of have open wounds all over our pelvic cavity. But you could, for example, look at this from the perspective of having a laparoscopy. Your healing from that should be finalized within 3 to 6 months. As long as you've healed correctly and you haven't gotten an infection, any pain remaining after that time will not be from the active healing process, but will be down to nerve sensitivity, pelvic floor dysfunction, remaining endo lesions, inflammation, etc. Okay, so now let's look at what happens in the case of chronic pain, in particular, of course, with endo. So as I just explained, your nervous system should once again calm down once the initial danger or threat has gone and healing is taking place. This allows that threshold to be restored, with the nerves only firing off danger signals when that threshold is exceeded. However, for some people, the nervous system cannot fully relax and instead it stays vigilant and on high alert. The nervous system then becomes easily triggered by everyday activities and minor stressors because it's in a state of low-level chronic stress, so it doesn't take much to switch on the flight or fight response and danger signals. With endometriosis, the brain and body may constantly feel that threat and stress, causing nerves to become extra sensitive because of the inflammatory scenario happening locally wherever the lesions are found. Interestingly,